1320 WILS. My next guest, the New York Times best-selling author, Steve Martini, joins us. His newest book, Blood Flag. It's a Paul Madriani novel. Steve, great to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Written many books, bestsellers, including The Enemy Inside, Traitor of Secrets, The Rule of Nine. How did you become an author? What was your pathway to that?
I had been a journalist for a period of time in Sacramento in the state capital, and I went to law school at night, and so I practiced law for about 17 years and decided I wanted to turn my hand at fiction. I wrote a novel, it got published. I wrote a second one, and it hit the New York Times list, so I was fortunate.
And nowadays, is it tough to make a living as an author?
It's getting harder. It's getting more difficult. It's like everything else. Technology has sort of turned a lot of industries upside down, and it's had an effect on publishing from the author's perspective, from independent bookstores and the like. Yeah.
Are people reading less nowadays? Or?
I think that's probably true of the younger generation. I don't think it's true of the older generation. I think they read probably more because they have more leisure time now. A lot of them are retired, and so that's the market, basically. And you try and break in with younger readers to series characters, for example.
You just tear them away from their phones. Was that a big step? Was it a risky move to go from your legal career to becoming an author?
Not for me, because I enjoyed writing, and part of it was what I wanted to do. It was a choice, not so much a financial choice, because the publisher paid me a great deal of money for a four-book contract. Mm-hmm. So I hung up I took my shingle off the wall and went to work on as an author fairly early on. I never really looked back, so I have no regrets. I've been doing this for a quarter of a century and doing it successfully.
So having worked as a journalist, where you're focusing on reality to writing fiction, what was that transition like?
It wasn't real hard for me, because I am a news junkie, and a lot of my stories come from the news. I read all kinds of sites and newspapers every day, and oftentimes I'll pluck something out of the news and look at it and then put it in a computer and let it germinate for a while and then pick it up maybe a year later and use it as a thread for a book. And it takes several ideas to craft a good novel, so you've got a lot of subplots and understorylines that you have to develop to keep the story moving.
Sounds like a very technical process.
It is. It's you learn how to do it over a period of years and how to organize your work and keep it flowing.
So you put an outline together first, and then you sit down and write the book?
Correct. Huh. Yeah, usually it comes from an outline. You don't always adhere to the outline strictly. You might deviate from it as the story goes on. Oftentimes the characters will take the story and run with it, and they come alive on the page.
Do you have anyone you consult with or get feedback during this process of trying to figure out the story?
I have an assistant, and I often bounce things off of her, and we'll sit and we'll collaborate a little bit and talk about storylines and where the story's going. But it's pretty much a solitary process. It's not like collaborating on a movie script or something like that, where you might have four or five writers. Yeah.
Now, the Paul Madriani series. What? Tell me about that. How did that come together?
Well, it started. I wrote a novel called The Simeon Chamber. It was a standalone mystery. It was my first novel. And I never intended to write a series, and I crafted a second book, which had a much harder veneer to it, much more realistic. It was a murder trial. It was seen from the perspective of the defense attorney, so it was first-person active voice. Mm-hmm. And I was influenced, I admit, heavily by Presumed Innocent, which had been written by Scott Turow. And it was a good book. Simeon Chamber was a good story, and then Compelling Evidence, which was the second novel, which created Paul Madriani.
And who is he exactly?
Who is he? He's a defense lawyer. He started out in a fictional Western capital, thinly veiled Sacramento. He has a partner named Harry Hines. They have a small defense practice, but they do mostly heavy-hitting criminal cases, including capital cases.
Is it based on your own career as a lawyer?
No, it wasn't, actually. I practiced law for about 17 years, but I did a lot of different things. I did some criminal law, some civil law, some bankruptcy, a lot of administrative law. So it came from that, and it also came from my my journalism career. I wrote for a legal newspaper in Southern California, and so I had an opportunity to interview a lot of heavy-hitting lawyers. So I interviewed Melvin Belli, going way back. I did during the Sirhan trial. I interviewed the trial judge. Mm-hmm. So I rubbed shoulders with a lot of people who are very influential in legal circles, and a lot of my characters come from composites of people that I've met.
Those kinds of people.
And did business with.
Is it? Do you think about these things becoming movies when you write a book, these kinds of books? Or?
You think with a cinematic eye, but you don't necessarily think about movies. Oftentimes, I have sold two of the books mm-hmm. for television miniseries, one to CBS, one to NBC. And you don't really think about that. If you do, it tends to affect your writing.
Did they produce those? Or?
Yes, they did. Okay. Yeah, they were produced and broadcast. Yeah.
And how did you think of, what do you think of seeing your book turned into a TV series?
Well, I don't think an author is always happy, but it's a different product. You know, it's their movie, and your book's still on the shelf. Uh-huh. They adhered to the story very closely. A lot of times, it's who they cast in the roles to play the characters, particularly Modigliani.
And what were the names of the two series?
One was The Judge, and the other was Undue Influence. Uh-huh. And they both aired. One had Brian Dennehy in the lead role, mm-hmm. and the other had Chris Noth. So they were both well done, and the networks put a great deal of money into them. So, and they did propel sales of books dramatically. So I really have no basis to complain.
Talking to Steve Martini, his brand new book Blood Flag. It's a Paul Modigliani novel. What is the Blood Flag?
The Blood Flag is actually a historic relic, if it still exists. We don't know. It disappeared. It was a flag that was created, actually designed by Hitler himself, back in the 1920s, just after he'd come out of the First World War. He was still working for the Army. He had left, actually, he just left the Army, a position which had put him in intelligence, and he was spying on groups that the Army wanted to keep an eye on, one of which was a small party of malcontents, basically, that he saw and decided he liked, mm-hmm. and took them over. They became the seeds of the Nazi Party. And he designed a swastika flag and used it in an attempted takeover of the city government in Munich, mm-hmm. in 1923, called the Beer Hall Putsch. And they marched behind the flag and were met by the Munich police. About 13 of his followers were shot down in a confrontation, killed. And one of them fell on top of the flag and bled out, hence the term the Blood Flag. It was later picked up as an icon and given to Hitler, and he used it after he became Fuhrer and used it to consecrate other flags. Well, the flag disappeared after the war. Uh-huh. No one knows what happened.
So he actually would carry it on his person typically? Is that it? Or?
No, he carried it in his car for events. It's seen on many pictures. If you go on the internet, you'll see pictures of it. Mm-hmm. And it was actually kept in an assembly of flags in a place called the Brown House in Munich, and that building was bombed by the Allies at the end of the war. They think it was probably destroyed, but there's also a theory that it may have been picked up by U.S. servicemen who occupied that city immediately at the close of the war. Uh-huh. They may have taken it home as a war trophy, not knowing what it was. It could be sitting in someone's attic. And therein lies the seeds of the story.
Yeah, and so how is it involved in your new novel specifically?
Well, in the novel, basically, what we have are a group of U.S. soldiers who were stationed in Munich at the end of the war, and one of them dies under mysterious circumstances, and the police charge his daughter with a mercy killing. Okay, he was in a nursing home. He was in bad health, and they think she killed her in a mercy killing. Mm-hmm. Well, when Paul takes the case and defends her in the homicide case, he discovers that some of the man's colleagues from the old Army unit also died under mysterious circumstances, and the threads all lead to this flag, and there's an interesting thread that ties all of these deaths together. And I won't give away too much because there's a lot of wicked twists and turns in the story. But it becomes a search for the flag, and Paul is driven not so much because he wants to find the flag. He's driven because he sent a young woman over to run an errand at this defendant's house, and she never was seen alive again. She was killed, was murdered, and one of his young colleagues in the office. And he wants to find out who killed her and why.
Sounds like you do a lot of historical research for a book like this, though.
You do.
Yeah.
And I enjoy doing research, and I enjoy getting the research and the details correct.
How did he come up with a swastika symbol? I mean, obviously it's not his symbol. It's an ancient symbol. But do we know why he chose that symbol?
I don't know, to be honest. I'm not sure anyone knows why he selected it. the swastika has a very interesting twist and turn in the book. Mm-hmm. It's a factual, okay? There was an army unit in the United States which used a swastika as an armband, as a shoulder insignia, before the war. And the War Department took it away from them, and it just so happens that it was the unit that was stationed in Munich at the end of the war.
Interesting. Realistic. And it's funny because I was just in India, and they have swastikas everywhere there. Mm-hmm. You know, they put them on their homes. They're a symbol of great luck. So it takes,
and the Indians used it. American Indians used it here.
Takes a little getting used to, because you see it at first, like, that is a swastika up there, yeah. Now, Steve, what, in terms of the series, is this a continuing series beyond this book then, or?
Yes, I've done 14 books in the Modigliani series, 17 novels in all, and I'm contracted for 2 more Modigliani stories. I'm working on one right now, but I have a ways to go.
Wow. How long does it take you to write a single book?
They're a year apart, so you're on a 1 year contract. Come up with about 100,000 words, 100,000 word. Novel.
1 year of writing, well, prepping, and then do you kind of do it in one shot when you start writing? Do you just get into it?
You try to, yeah. Uh-huh. You try not to get away from the storyline, because if you do, you lose the threads of it. These books are complicated because they have a lot of subplots and twists and turns, and you don't want to get too far away from the story. So once you get your head into it and start cranking out words, you want to stay with it until you get to the end of the manuscript.
Do you have a little secret, isolated place you go to write, or do you do
it? I'm sitting in it right now. It's a cave downstairs in my house. So it's where you do your work.
You have a do not disturb sign and a lock or something?
Nobody bothers me here. Yeah.
They know. It's Steve Martini, his new book, Blood Flag. Steve, New York Times bestselling author, the latest in the Paul Modigliani series, Blood Flag by Steve Martini. Steve, thank you very much.
Thank you. Can I say one word? If they're looking for the book, if readers are looking for the book, go to stevemartini.com online, and all the books will be laid out there. They're all available in ebook as well as in hardcover and paperback.
But are people mostly buying ebooks nowadays for your series?
Yeah, I'd say it's about 50-50. Uh-huh. Yeah, I'd say it's about 50% of them are, it's very convenient. You know, people don't have to carry them around with them, especially if you travel a lot.
Right on the Kindle, right?
Yep, read it on the Kindle or on the iPad or any of those.
Yeah. Nice. And Steve Martini again, Blood Flag, the brand new book, Blood Flag. Steve, thank you again.
Thank you very much.
Yep.